And to that piece of lieutenant that's always on his podcast, bash us, yeah.
All right, everybody. Eric Timmy, most complained cop, NYPD. This is New York's finest retired and filtered podcast. Along with me, founder and co-host of the podcast, John McCary, retired lieutenant. And here we have a special guest, our friend Adam, the owner of Loud Labs, New York City. Adam is all over media, independent freelance journalism. Does an outstanding job of his independent video of really putting out some great content. So, Adam,
thank you.
Tell the public, look, absolutely. I love your stuff. Adam's no stranger to the media, and actually is doing his own show right now. So, Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell the public who you are and exactly what Loud Labs is doing as we speak.
So, I'm the owner of Loud Labs NYC, otherwise known as LLN NYC. We've been around about 7 years or so. And I started off, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Citizen app. So I used to work for them and they paid me to go around filming stuff, you know, going live. And I did that between driving for Uber, between picking up my different passengers. I happened to be close to something. I would, you know, roll to that scene, go live in the Citizen app and say, hey guys, it's Adam. Check it out. We got a, you know, shooting here. You got a victim. We got, you know, whatever's going on. And when they ended the reporter program, they didn't want to pay me anymore or whatever. I said, hey, you know what? I still want to do this for a living, even if it's just a hobby. I don't know if it pays. I've seen the movie Nightcrawler. I forget if I saw the show Shot in the Dark on Netflix yet. So I was just thinking to myself, there's got to be a way that, you know, someone like me can run around and film stuff and sell it to the news stations, right? Because I obviously knew that these scanners were the key to finding these newsworthy incidents, right? And I knew the scam because I worked previously in EMS. In fact, I was probably still working in EMS as a volunteer. At the time, I was no longer working for a private EMS company. So I was just volunteering. I was driving Uber. I was going live on Citizen and getting paid for it. But when that ended, I said, hey, I still want to be able to film stuff with my camera and hopefully it might make me some money. So I started, you know, calling up all the news stations and saying, hey, I got this shooting. I got this fight that I caught on you know, the halal worker attacked or whatever, stuff like that. And, you know, faced a lot of rejection, faced a lot of no's and, you know, we don't deal with people that who aren't already signed up with us or something, you know. But it was a matter of time when I had something that they wanted. It wasn't just, you know, a crime scene with nothing going on. It wasn't just a fire with no flames. It was the, I believe, a perp that police shot in Brooklyn. And I got a shot of him in the ambulance getting treated by EMS. I believe that was my first what they call hit or sale. I can recall that one being one of the first few. I can recall a halal worker being attacked. That was a good one as well. And I can also recall a scene where I believe a bus flipped over and some little toddlers came out. And I got the shot of firefighters holding the hands of the toddlers and, you know, putting them all in an ambulance. So they really loved those stories and what I shot. And it's all because I knew what was going on because I knew what to listen to on the scanners.
Adam, why did you use the name Loud Labs to start your business? What's Loud Labs? Like, where'd that come from?
So I did not create the name Loud Labs. That's probably a question for Scott Lane. He's the founder of Loud Labs. And that started long time ago in Los Angeles, California, where they have one of the highest saturated stringer markets and the competition there is cutthroat. They got a lot of stringers there, a lot of people working, they got a lot of stake, and they have also a lot of these live streamers, fire buffs, you'll go to a fire and you'll see 10 people with phones and cameras and whatnot, and everybody's filming, everybody's looking to monetize, you know, this content. And it got bad after that show came out on Netflix, Shot in the Dark. But for some reason, in New York City, I haven't seen that similar, you know, oversaturation of stringers. You know, I think it takes a lot for someone to say, hey, I'm going to be out every night, potentially not getting paid, listening to the scanners all night, hoping to make a buck or two selling to the news stations. It takes a lot.
Yeah, there's a couple of yous out there, like Viral News. There's a couple of different females out there. Oila School, I believe. New York Stank. There's a couple of them, but not a lot, you know, like you said.
Yeah, there's folks running around with, you know, they download the Stringer app or whatever, and, you know, they get paid a few bucks, you know. Nothing, not the most professional stuff, but, you know, that is one of our competitors. Including the Citizen app, even, you know, people will go live just for the dopamine hit of seeing people, you know, heart or whatever. And that's good enough for them. And the stations will use it for free. And then they won't buy our stuff. So depending, of course, on what we got and what the Citizen app.
Well, I think, I think that journalism is so important, right? There's so many different forms of journalism. And I think that the aspect that you take part of is really changing the game and really retracting from mainstream media. And I think eventually mainstream media is going to be something of the past. And I think we're really going to this, and I want to thank Adam. We spoke offline. And I didn't even know what the terminology stringer was until you mentioned it, which is to do independent video journalism.
Some say Nightcrawler.
What's that?
Some say Nightcrawler too. That's
that's great. Yeah, you know what? People should refer to that movie because that's exactly what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Another one is Paparazzi Spain.
I gotta check that out. Okay.
Paparazzi.
It's quite interesting. You know, it's quite interesting though that you said that the market in New York is not as saturated as it is in California. You would think it is. So that's definitely interesting to hear. So you had an opportunity to really get into it before it gets to a point where you're really cutting each other's throats here. So with that being said, let's get right into it, right? Obviously, we're talking about policing, a focus on the NYPD and how politics has penetrated the police department. And we really think that correlates to journalism now, especially when you talk about the Citizens Act. So we have what's new right now to New York City, especially the NYPD, is encryption of radios. So you talked about following the scanners. And I always thought it was important, actually, doing police work, that journalism actually was part of holding the police accountable and really being transparent on getting information out there live to the public. I have to say, John, you probably agree. I remember working as a cop, even as a cop. I just thought it was so amazing. And when I was a cop, I started out in Staten Island. And it was like sometimes the journalist, it almost felt like they got to the scene before me. And I was like, wow, this guy's so quick. Right? It was impressive. So
depending on
now that we got to a point, now we've gotten to a point of encryption of radios, how does that affect Citizens app? Is that going to be completely shut down? And how does that affect you as far as video journalism? Is that going to hurt you when it comes to monetization? And how do you feel, how does that retract from holding the police department accountable and actually getting real-time information out to the public?
So three-part question. So Citizen app, some people have said on the comments, oh, well, you don't need the scanners. All you need is the Citizen app. I'll have some people will say, you don't need to listen to the scanners. You can download this app on your phone. And I'm thinking, these people have no idea what they're talking about. Because whether it's Broadcastify on your phone or online, whether it's a Citizen app, whether it's, you know, whatever source of scanner listening or app notification app you might have, the source is the scanners. Now, Citizen app, from what I understand, they have a team of folks who listen to the scanners, right? And they're putting out the jobs that they're listening to as they're coming in, you know, and not just confirmed jobs like someone shot, they're putting over unconfirmed jobs, which my local councilman, he doesn't like that they do that, because they're putting over shots fired. Someone's calling 911 over fireworks. They're saying it's shots fired. It's not shots fired. It's fireworks. And now the neighborhood's freaking out, saying, oh, my God, the neighborhood's turning into crap. And, you know, we're getting shootings every night. And he doesn't like that. You know, there's a he doesn't think that, you know, and I think that he doesn't like that they're putting out jobs that are not 100% confirmed, like, you know, shots fired or, you know, man with a gun or whatever. Then it's a gun run. And then it's what? 90X or whatever. Right. Unfounded. So, you know. So, yes, Citizen depends on the scanners to get these alerts and notifications out to people. We depend on it as well, primarily because I work on the overnights, you know, and there's certain things that I need on tape that I depend on the scanners for. Right. Let's take the scanners out of the equation. I'm going to sit on my computer waiting for an email from DCBI about a homicide. I check the email. I'm reading this homicide. I'm just giving you an example. It says, I'm receiving this email at 3 o'clock in the morning. It says, the homicide happened at approximately 6 p.m. yesterday. Now I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. If I went there 9 hours later, there's not going to be a crime scene. Unless it's like a, you know, multiple homicide, mass murder, whatever, right? Most likely the crime scene tape's going to be gone. The victim's going to be gone. I can't get the victim on tape. And what about the witnesses who might have gotten on their cell phone, maybe got whatever on their cell phone? Witnesses might have, I need to interview, that I need to get on tape. It's all going to be gone, right, without the scanners. With the scanners, I can immediately respond. My response time could be 5 minutes if it's like, you know, someone shot in Midtown. If it's 30 minutes away in the Rockaways, maybe. I can still get there, and the crime scene is still generally going to be fresh. The closer I am, the better stuff I can get, whether it's victims, maybe perps getting arrested, witnesses that might have seen something, stuff like that. So I need all this stuff on tape. Because that is what the news outlets, our clients, want on tape, right? Crying family members or friends, you know, dramatic stuff that we capture on tape. Without the scanners, we're waiting for an email, hoping that they're sending out that sheet fast enough. And that's all we're going to have if they don't.
I mean, but besides it hindering your work, right? What are your overall thoughts on it? We did a podcast not too long ago, and I said that I believe that this is the most non-transparent mayoral and NYPD administrations we've ever seen. I believe they're on a perception campaign where they want this perception that crime is down. And just like you said, your councilman doesn't like that these calls come over. But this is what the cops are dealing with, right? Like we talk about that all the time, like the fake 911 calls that you go to, the jobs that, you know, someone does think they're shots fired, but they're not shots fired. They're, you know.
What is it, 314 Riverside or something like that? You guys heard of that?
I mean, there's a million Riverside cases where they're going to put over 1013s because they want the cops to get off of the, they want the cops to come off of, they're going to put over a 1013 as officer down. They're going to put over a 1085 officer fighting in the hallway. I mean, there's a million jobs like that where they're trying to pull officers off. And I think it's something that the public should hear. Now, I would be in favor of a slight delay with the radio, so it's not in real time. I would definitely be in favor of it. But as far as pulling the encryption totally, I feel it's a move to detract from transparency, to pull away transparency so the public cannot hear these 911 jobs, cannot hear how long it's taking in a diminished NYPD with the numbers, how long it's taking them to respond to jobs, and what actually is going on in the public. And also the perception of you showing up and others like you now getting this on film and putting it out there. And then people like me and Eric sharing it on social media and talking about it on our podcast. And then it creates crime, crime, crime. What are your personal thoughts about it, aside from your professional thoughts?
Yeah, Todd Mizell, I wrote this article AM News saying that his source in the mayor's office told him that Eric Adams does not like crime in the news. You know, guy shot bloody in a stretcher being treated in an ambulance, you know, shots like that. We get those shots. Our clients want those shots. So that's what we do. As far as transparency, you know, if we can't interview the witnesses ourselves, then all we are relying on is that DCPI narrative. That's it, right? What if someone had a different story, their own version of what happened or what they saw that is different from what NYPD or DCPI is saying what happened? Because the narratives are pretty dry. They're not the most detailed things in the world, you know? And when you hear of additional details, I don't know how these reporters get it. They're probably interviewing witnesses, or they might know somebody in the department maybe that are giving them additional details, you know, stuff like that. So, but yeah, we need the scanners so we can get this raw footage, get these interviews with these witnesses. And yeah, I think that if NYPD wants more transparency, then in my opinion, it should only be the media. If you want to delay it, let them delay it for your hobbyist who just likes to listen to it for fun online or whatever. You know, let that be 30 minutes delay, whatever delay they want. Like, you know, give us the media, the press, instant access. Now, we're not even asking, in my opinion, I don't even think we need access to, you know, TAC-G or, you know, the SRG protest frequencies and all that kind of stuff, because I personally heard where, you know, protesters during 2020 BLM, they were going on Citywide One or whatnot saying, oh, Captain such and such, you know, we're going to do something to him, or they were threatening him. I forget his name, though, but I remember his face. I see him at all the protests.
Nikas.
Sorry?
Nikas. Inspector Nikas.
So, you know, I've witnessed firsthand people somehow getting on there and, you know, abusing the, you know, that unencrypted radio. So I don't think we may not need Citywide One that SRG uses. We probably don't need TAC-G, you know, because they'll say, all right, we're going in, guys, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, before they go into a barricaded or whatever, right? Yeah. Hey, I'm just waiting outside. When they bring him out the front door, I'll get a shot of the perp, right? Well, we need SOD. We need highway. We need the local division. Because right now in Staten Island, or the entire North Brooklyn, right? What is it? 7773-8488-9395, whatever. We don't know what's going on. We hear shots fired on SOD or highway or whatever. We can't tune into the 77 and figure out what the condition is. I called DCPI. They said, we don't have a condition. Call back in an hour. So then now we got to roll to this job. It could be 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. Wasting gas, possibly. We get there. Eventually the story's out. Oh, he just got, you know, shot in the toe or something, and he's, you know, not even a big deal. He's not a bodega worker. He's just a, you know, just another guy shot, maybe as a rap sheet, you know, whatever. So then we waste gas, you know. So traditionally we tune into the precincts, figure out if it's, you know, oh my god, Central likely rush the bus, you know, and then we're like, oh, now we're gonna rush there too. So usually someone who's, you know, likely or critical is newsworthy, but it's not always the case.
You know, everything that you're saying, first of all, it speaks volumes to me, right? There's so much information that you provided here. There's so much unpacked for our viewers out there. to have an opportunity to listen to this. First of all, it rings bells to me that the councilman doesn't like the stuff being broadcasted. And you know what? We shouldn't have the opportunity to discuss what we like and what we don't like. Because it's so interesting about the politicians in New York City that have enacted legislation to hold the police department accountable and be so finicky when it comes to so many detailed information, just as we've seen in the How Many Stops Act, the Right to Know Act, the Diaphragm Law. So when it comes to that, they want transparency, but they don't want this to be transparent because it does give the reality of what's going on, and they can't sell perception. I've been saying that the weak appointed management, the NYPD, has been selling perception. It's almost like a used car salesman. And it's important, I think, for the public to actually hear what goes on in these scanners in the day in the life of a police officer that you're responding to. It's so mysterious when you're working out there that you're getting calls, you know, that could be putting your life and everyone else's life at danger. And some of these calls are ultimately fake. But I think what's also important is that when you're doing this independent journalism, I do think also there's a crime aspect, but also that could be an effect. Because I'm pretty confident, without even asking you, there's probably scenes that you respond to that witnesses are willing to talk to you before they go to talk to the police out of comfort and, you know, someone that's not a police representative. They're probably willing to provide information to you versus the police department. But what's also interesting to me is when you said DCPI will provide the information and it's 9 hours later. And just to think in those 9 hours, how a scene or information could be detailed and laid out in a different manner, right? And give a different spin than what actually happened on the scene. And also, what I think is a problem, what I think that you offer to the public and other independent journalists that are out there, is just the free flow of a metropolis, right? When you get to a scene, you can advise people online, social media, or viral news, or other people just like you. Hey, listen, there's a crime scene going on at such and such location. You know, avoid this location. Take other, you know, because of the traffic it's going to cause or pedestrian traffic, not to put people in harm's way. Maybe there's a potential riot going on, right? You want to advise people to take another route home to keep them safe. There's a lot of stuff I think is really causing the public to miss the mark because I believe, you know, to give this mirage of what's really going on there. So what is your relationship? And so I'd like to ask, what is your relationship right now, or do you have one, with the police department? Do you have a network of people in the police department? Do you feel with this administration that you have to have a network or a friendship in the police department to actually get press information? Like John mentioned, viral news. He's out there. He's got a lot of followers. He's really making a name for himself. He's grinding when it comes to the migrant crisis. But we found that there was some real opposition with him when it came to the police department. But now we're starting to see that he's actually warmed up and he's becoming he's building an alliance within the police department. Is that necessary?
So you're talking about me. Well, without giving away too much information, yes, I do have quote unquote sources, but obviously I'm not going to say, you know, which department, who, when, why, whatever. But yes, and some of it is from social media and they're a fan of our work. And, you know, and I will say the information isn't anything too crazy. Because really all I need sometimes is just the condition of a victim, likely or not. That's all I need to know. If I need to make a decision, if I'm going to roll to that scene or not, right? And sometimes there will be some supervisors on scene that are kind enough, you know, because they're in charge, right? They can just say, hey, you know, likely or not? Yeah, like, you know, that's all I need sometimes, you know, and it's not much. They're not giving away anything too crazy, you know. But obviously I'm not gonna, you know, provide any too much detail about sources, right? So, John, I can't hear you.
You're still muted.
Sorry about that. I was getting a little feedback, so I muted my mic. But obviously speaking of danger and all that, like it sounds like what you do is pretty dangerous. You're rolling around New York City streets, running towards the crime. I know you got a show on YouTube where, like, you basically, it shows the work that you do, like the type of work that you do, the journalism. What would you say to the public? Like, as your work sounds very, it sounds very similar to being a cop or an EMS or a firefighter, like out there on the street. Like, what is the danger? And if you could just give us an example of things that, like, you do face.
Well, some of us call ourselves second responders. You know, you got the first responders, you got the second responders, which is the media, or the stringers who show up, and we show up aggressively as fast as we can. And of course, you know, I mean, the main thing at night is just the fact that there's no traffic, right? People think that we need to race around and do crazy stuff to get to the scene. I mean, you're working at night. There's no traffic, so that we don't need to do anything too crazy. But yes, it's dangerous in a sense that, you know, was it 2 years ago, the basketball player was shot at a cookout along with 9 other people. You may have heard about that story in Harlem. You know, I showed up and I was parking my car as cops were saying that they are shooting at each other right now. You know, 85 shots fired. And I was throwing on my body armor and running towards that scene. And I got victims on the ground everywhere. Quite a scene, you know. Shootings are dangerous to go to. You don't know what to expect. Usually there's a lot of cops there. I got body armor. So, you know, some people don't want to be filmed. Some people have came after me, you know. Crashes may not be as dangerous. Except unless you're on the highway, you know, there's a lot of cars driving around. Of course, again, you've got possible upset family or friends who don't want to be filmed. They might come after me. Then you've got fires, which, you know, obviously the smoke, eat a lot of smoke, you know. Sometimes I'm up on these roofs. Again, friends and family upset sometimes. Yeah.
Well, my hat's off to you. I think that journalism is a tough job, especially, like I said, viral news. We know that he really goes into some dangerous situations trying to expose the migrant crisis. And I hear from yourself, you really put yourself, I agree with John, you really put yourself in some dangerous situations to get out the information, which is really important. I think it holds the police department accountable. It also get a bird's eye view of what's going on with the public. And I do think that, you know, you'll see things through a different lens that the police department might not see because you're looking at it for video purposes and for viewership. So, you know, with that being said, as press right now in the technology area, so John and I have talked a lot about Kaz Daughtry, who's the Deputy Commissioner for Operations for New York City Police Department. And his role has mostly become about talking about drones. So I don't know if it's permitted. I'm not sure. I have to start reading up on this. But have you done any journalism by drones? And are you permitted? Are you allowed to? Is that something you've explored?
Yes, but not in New York City. So we have a guy who lives in Suffolk County. And he has, you know, the FAA Part 107, whatever it's called, licensing, and, you know, he does everything the right way. He runs a drone business, actually, for some commercial work that he does as well, in addition to working with us. And from what I've seen, his drone work, he'll do weather stuff, you know, flooding. He'll do fires, you know, mansions, billionaires' mansions on fire in the Hamptons, stuff like that. So, yes, you know, we've done it through him. But I've never done it in New York City because I know generally in New York City, they say it's illegal. Not mentioning any names, but I have seen competitors' drones being flown. I don't know to what degree it may or may not have been legal, but I know that me personally, I'm not going to take the risk because, you know, there's alternatives. We get up on rooftops to film fires, you know. It's not 100% necessary. It's nice. And I think if they maybe changed the laws or made it easier for journalists to use drones in New York City the right way, you know, without crashing into helicopters and whatnot, you know, we could use them because sometimes we can't get to highways. You know, some of these elevated expressways, that if we stop, the highway cops are not going to be happy with us. You know, even if we wear yellow vests or, you know, have our strobing amber lights on our cars, doesn't matter to them. They want us off the highway. And I think drones would come in handy in those situations because we could be below the expressway maybe and get the drone above the expressway, you know, or get on top of a roof overlooking the expressway. So we try to get as creative as possible. It's very tactical. It's like a game of chess every night with our competitors.
And before John goes, do you use does this guy use a drone controller? Or do you know if he uses a PS5 controller at all to operate his drones?
I have been watching some of your stuff, so I do controller reference. So. You gotta be able to laugh about this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's all in fun. It's all out of love. Adam, how much stuff do you get not on the radio?
Right? They say truth in comedy, right? You're laughing because it's true.
Yeah, that's it, you know. But how much stuff do you think you get off the radio? Like how many you've been out there 7 years, you said you've been doing this? A little bit longer, maybe. Like how much stuff did you just bump into?
Sorry, say again.
Like, how much stuff did you just bump into when you're like, oh, wow, I better film this?
Oh, yeah, all the time, especially when driving Uber because, you know, I'm driving around the five boroughs. I could be even in Long Island or Jersey or upstate any time of the day. And, yeah, you know, what I would do is I would have a coiled earpiece in my ear. And some of my passengers would ask me about it, like, hey, what's going on with the earpiece? I'm like, oh, I'm listening to in case something happens, you know. So that was, you know, when I was just lucky to you know, I mean, more recently, I could say I was at a shooting in Diaper Heights and five alarm fire happened also in Diaper Heights. So, of course, you know, I get there 1 minute and I capture this off duty firefighter carrying out his disabled neighbor, you know, elderly gentleman, and saves his life. And that was all over the news. FDNY did a whole press conference about him. I'll never forget it, you know, and it's because of that shot of him carrying out his neighbor helped raise thousands of dollars on his GoFundMe. That's probably my most memorable scene and probably the best work I've done to really help somebody as opposed to, you know, the stereotype of, oh, you're just here to, you know, film someone else's pain, you know, which is, you know, why they call us sometimes the paparazzi of pain. We get a bad rep going around filming, you know, people's, you know, on the worst day.
So I see that you wear the shirt that says press. And I assume for the most part that when you're out, yeah, awesome shirt, by the way, I said, assume that when you're out there, you're pretty identifiable. But have you or are you doing now any undercover reporting, any undercover journalism to get video, to get a story? Have you put yourself in situations where it's dangerous, where you were hiding your identity so that you could get information? Has that been some part of your work?
Protests. Right? Protests. I went from big camera, obvious press, obvious loud labs, you know, to totally blending in, you know, jeans and a t-shirt, jacket, you know, riding a electric scooter or a bicycle, filming with my phone or a very small camera, being as low-key as possible. Because if they find out who you are, right, they might make assumptions. They'll look at our page and say, I see you covered an Israeli rally. Which we don't even cover too many of those. But they'll see one video and they'll make an assumption about who we are and what political biases we might have. When in reality, we actually cover more of the Free Palestine protests. And you know what? The Free Palestine protests get a lot of views on social media, especially YouTube. And just because, you know, my guy happens to want to go and cover these things, right? I also have another guy who likes to go to the Israeli demonstrations and vigils and such. So it's just about what they want to cover. Me, I work at night. So I'm going to run into crimes, fires, and crashes, not necessarily protests. But I have covered protests in 2020 BLM. I witnessed the chaos, the looting, the lockdowns, the police cars on fire. We, in fact, interviewed the, I'm not sure if you heard about this attorney who threw a Molotov cocktail at the RMP.
Yep, the two attorneys.
So, funny story is, a friend of mine said, hey, let's go to 7-Eleven, get a snack, hungry. So we go in there, run into her, and I say, hey, I noticed she's wearing the, you know, the Palestine kafaya or whatever. Of course, it wasn't even that trendy back then, right? So, but she was wearing it. I said, hey, did you want to, you know, say anything for local news, you know, about the protests, your thoughts and feelings about it? And so she had a lot to say. And she also was mentioning Mayor de Blasio, something like that. And I think after that, she went on to throw that Molotov cocktail. And it was all over the news and the New York Post and all that kind of stuff. I think, I forget her name, Arush Rahman or something.
Adam, have you noticed, like, you're out there, you interact with the police, I would assume, every day, multiple times a day. I said you're out there every day. So you interact with the NYPD and other agencies every day. How do you feel the consensus among the men and women are about your work? And what do you feel just from the outside? How do they feel about overall morale of the police department?
I get the vibe sometimes, you know, sometimes when I am being attacked or they, you know, they're kind of resistant or hesitant to take action unless I literally get punched in the face or something. And it takes them a lot to want to, you know, like, hey, what are you doing here? Why are you going after this journalist or whatever, right? It takes them, you know, not most recently, the one you saw about the guy wanting to get into the crime scene, or should I say they, because you didn't confirm the pronoun, right? So, so the cops there, I went intentionally behind these wall of three cops. And that individual, you know, kept on trying to get in, cursing at the cops, cursing at me. And I'm not the guy who's going to stop filming just because someone tells me to stop filming. If he would have assaulted one of those officers, I would have had it on tape. And if the cops asked for it, I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, evidence for you guys. You guys got assaulted or whatever, you know, but so yeah, those cops were great, but there's been times when I feel like they are resistant to do something, especially when they're already at a job, like guarding a crime scene. You'll see another case where you may have seen that video of this lunatic running around, angering the whole neighborhood. Everyone wanted to beat him up. He was lying on the ground. He might have been on something, and the cops took a while to get him, you know, an ambulance or restrain him. They ended up chasing him around the block. Couldn't catch him. He had to come back to the cops guarding the crime scene, and he came close enough to them for one of them to just grab him, you know? So, but other than that, how do they treat me? Either they follow me and they know who I am already, which is a lot of cops. Or, you know, they're going to treat me like any other photographer or journalist or whatever. And hey, you know, stay back, you know, the usual stuff, you know. I think I was confused for one of CRT video guys because I was wearing khakis. One. You know, because the video where the guy, he hits the motocross guy. Some people said he might have been cop watch or something. But now I was trying to get a shot of this bike rider on the ground. And one of the CRT cops said, whoa. No, you're with us, right? You're with us. Never mind.
Are you talking about when Jose pushed the guy off the scooter?
Yeah, I mean, it looked to me
under
like
an overpass. It was under the train platform.
Yeah, it looked to me like he was like, "Whoa, where's this biker coming out of nowhere?" And he was like, "Some kind of reaction." You know, I don't think he was going around like hitting bike riders all night for no reason, you know.
I just got a kick out of it because if that was a cop, he would have went nuts. So I just got to – I'm like, regardless if the cop was just protecting himself or whatever, he would have went nuts. It would have been all over. And he actually, a few months later, he shared a similar video, but it was a cop this time. And I was like, wait. And I shared his video. I was like, isn't this you?
I didn't follow what happened to him or if they did they speak to him. Did they arrest him? I was just so focused on – the bike ride.
I'm curious.
Be friendly, you know, when I'm out there, you know, I don't have any major problems with anybody. Every now and then you'll get like an angry cop maybe, or, you know, they're very enthusiastic about the crime scene, or maybe they'll make a crime scene out of a fire scene where it's not even necessary to make a crime scene out of a fire scene unless you're in the 6-6 or something where every fire in the 6-6 is a level one mobilization for crowd control.
Yep, they'll run right towards the fire. Right towards the fire.
Yeah.
But Adam, I can definitely tell you're doing this for 7 years. I mean, you know a lot of police lingo. We talked offline. You know a lot of police lingo. You have great insight to this. So with that being said, you know that as the most complained cop, you know, I've been trying to be on a crusade, being the catalyst for change when it comes to CCRB. CCRB has the authority to self-initiate cases against police officers. Have you ever been contacted by the Civilian Complaint Review Board to obtain some of your video for maybe that you've captured for an incident involved in the riot or some type of tussle? Have you ever been contacted by the CCRB?
Yes, and at first, my first response to anybody asking for a video is I'll give them an amount, right? Oh, you know, 1,000 for this video, you know, whatever number, you know, that's just a random number I threw out. But that's usually my first response. And then I don't know what they replied with, some kind of legal jargon. And I'm like, oh, all right, here's the video. And they're like, wait a minute. No, wait, we want the full raw video. And I'm like, no, that's how I film, in 5 to 10 second clips. I don't turn the camera on filming for an hour at a protest, you know, wasting tape. I literally film in clips. I'm pressing the start and stop constantly. So I think they weren't happy with the clip style recording I was doing or whatever. But, you know, but yeah, I don't know the legalities about that. I just said, hey, you know what? You know, you're a city organization, whatever, you're asking for video. Of course, I didn't fully understand what CCRB was. I probably still don't, but, you know, I just gave them the video. I didn't speak to an attorney about it or anything, you know.
No, yeah. Listen, you're doing great work. You got hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube. You got hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram. I get you to post a little bit more, or you'll have hundreds of thousands on Twitter too. I also seen that you're starting a side business where you're filming homes if someone wants to sell their house and stuff like that. Tell us about that. What's that?
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting to regular videography, regular as in not journalism, right? Could be real estate. That's one of my focuses right now. Could be weddings, could be, you know, filming live bands I actually like listening to. So it's pretty fun. You know, I am passionate about doing stuff that I like to do, that I'm passionate about. I definitely don't do things that I don't like to do anymore. I used to be a nursing assistant. I used to, you know, work in food service. I used to do telemarketing, you know, all kinds of random things. And A79 Films is the name of the brand. And real estate agents who need video or photography for their listings can, you know, hit us up and, you know, we can get that video work done. I haven't tried weddings yet. And I'm willing to try that as well. Having a lot of fun with filming live bands as well. I might get into some other things, you know, social media content for influencers, you know, even for you guys, you know, unfortunately, I think you're both not in New York City. I'm not trying to give away your location.
That's right. Everybody knows where we are. Yeah.
you know, if you got New York City, you know, it would be cool to set up some kind of, you know, podcast style, you know, you ever watch, what is it? The Sean Ryan show, is it? Sean Ryan? You know, he has some really high quality podcasts, you know, with like veterans, war stories, stuff like that, you know?
We are going to be doing that, and we are in New York a lot often. So, I mean, I'll definitely hit you up when we come, you know? So, because we definitely need consulting because we don't know any of the stuff.
Yeah. So. Because, you know, I always do the first genre of video for free, and then I take that to other people and I'll say, hey, look, check out my portfolio. You know, you may consider getting your podcast work done with this. Check out this work we've done for New York's Finest Podcast. You know,
appreciate that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think that we all need to link up when we're in New York, and maybe we should take some videos in front of One Police Plaza. I think the police department would really appreciate that. But you definitely sound like a jack of all trades. You would drive an Uber and running around. You sound like a real hustler. You know that you have some real drive. Well, go ahead. What were you saying?
EMS.
EMS. You're right. So, I mean, you've run around. You're definitely ambitious, and you have to be doing the kind of journalism that you're doing. So, where did you learn independent journalism, freelance? Do you have a formal educational background? This is something you learned by proxy, by doing it. Where did you learn the stuff that you're doing?
As I was getting into it, I was taking classes at Kingsborough Community College, you know, journalism class, broadcast journalism, stuff like that. And, you know, they helped me with, you know, small things, you know, camera stuff, you know, the types of shots and framing and all that kind of stuff, you know. But really, the teacher was really the streets, because I have trained people without any formal education to go from, you know, you not using a camera or not filming stuff to responding to these scenes, filming them with professional cameras and stuff like that. These days, I really don't... would prefer not to, you know, train someone from the ground up, because it is a lot of work. So anyone with, you know, some camera experience, some experience with maybe knowing, maybe there's some kind of buff or something, you know, they know the 10 codes and such, they know scanners, and they drive. So these are some of the things we look for. But how I learned is mainly through the streets. In EMS, that taught me the 10 codes, because at the, not going to say which voluntary ambulance, but we had to buff jobs, because when they called 911, that call did not go to our volley. So we had to go buff jobs on ourselves. And, you know, FDNY EMS would love us for it, because now we're taking their drunk to the hospital, you know? So I learned through EMS, the 10 codes. Videography is something that I've been doing in every hobby that I get into. So I was already familiar with filming and cameras and stuff like that, responding to jobs from just EMS and knowing the city from Uber, because I drove pretty much everywhere in New York City. And I also did bike messenger work. So the way sometimes that I think about maneuvering and emergency maneuvers sometimes, you know, I think of what I would do as a cyclist, and it works in a car too, believe it or not. So
that's a dangerous job. Yeah. Those guys are crazy, man. I used to watch them in Manhattan, and I'm like, I don't know how this guy's doing this. Adam, listen, for our YouTube and our Rumble, I have your stuff on the bottom of the screen, but could you just tell us verbally where we could find you, how we could contact you, how we could send you information or hire you? Or, you know, what's the best ways to get at you?
For Loud Labs, the YouTube is youtube.com/loudlabnewsnyc. You YouTube it, you just type LLNNYC. On Instagram, it's Loud Labs NYC. On Twitter, it should be, or X, it should be Loud Labs NYC. I believe that's it. Facebook, it just should be LLN NYC. And for the my videography production brand, it's A79 Films on Instagram and on YouTube.
Outstanding. I gotta say, it's really been an honor to speak with you. I, you know, John and I are a big fan of the stuff that you put out there. We follow you on social media, and we see all the videos and the pictures that you put on, and they're always spot on. I love the work that you're doing. I do. I think that you're ambitious. I mean, the fact that you rolled around in all these different, really adverse, different type of jobs. I mean, EMS, Uber, doing freelance work. Before we close, I just want to ask you, because I think this is important as the world is changing. What does freelance independent journalism have to offer that the mainstream media cannot? And that's why I think it's really been changing. What are some of what's the positive feedback that you could say about your type of journalism that the mainstream media cannot give to the public?
Raw footage, right? If you watch any, there are length videos, you'll see some fires. You'll watch that fire for about half an hour, right? A major police-involved shooting might be 20 minutes. Just depends on what the job is, Raw footage. We send a lot of stuff. We send a lot of videos. We probably sent thousands of videos to the media, to MSM over the years. What percentage you think actually sold and was actually broadcasted or aired versus the thousands that you'll see on our YouTube channel, right? But now somebody who was involved in a crash or someone's home that burned down or someone's friend or family was shot that never made the news, they can go on our YouTube channel and they can watch that video, and they may have, it may provide them with useful information or, something, but when people follow us, they know that they're getting a lot of raw footage, a lot of raw content, right? Cops might go to a lot of jobs every day. None of it might make the news, but we show up just because we happen to be close by or we think it might be newsworthy. You're going to see your job that you went to as a cop on social media, on our channel, And firefighters have even told us that they would watch our videos that we filmed of fires that they were in and use that as a way to debrief after a fire. So yeah, a lot of raw footage, a lot of stuff that doesn't make the news. And especially our YouTube channel. I know Instagram, we might share things that are, may not be ours. But in some cases, we are getting raw footage from someone's cell phone on the scene. And the news, our clients will pay for that footage because there's no other way to get it. You can't just go on New York Scoop and see the latest viral, violent, bloody video. You have to get it from someone, a real person, and show up to that scene and get it. It's not going to be anywhere else. It's not going to be on a WhatsApp group or whatnot.
No, yeah, I pulled you up here. I got it for the viewers on the screen. I have your Instagram up. I went to, and I could see LLN on WPIX 11, LLN on News 12, LLN on New York 1, LLN on CBS 2. So I mean, you guys are out there. You're really providing a service to the mainstream media, right? Like that's as well as the public. I mean, and again, just to go back around one more time. Eric, we didn't really get your thoughts on it, and I just kind of want you both to like close on what are your thoughts on the encryption of the radios? Like, what do you think, Eric?
Absolutely. Listen, I was on the street the entire time of my career for almost 20 years, and we always had those tag channels that were encrypted that we could have conversations. I think that it should be – I agree with you, John. I've talked about this over the years, that there could be a delay or maybe even some type of beeping sound. But I do think that the media, mainstream media, and especially people like yourself, this freelance independent type journalism, because you said it's raw footage, it's not edited, it's not, it's all real time. It does weigh things out. We always need balance. And it does hold the police department accountable to make sure that we're putting out the proper information, that we're not hiding crime, let's be honest, right? That we're not, and they talk about perception versus reality. And the stuff that you put out is reality. You're putting out what's actually happening. I think people need to see that I'm completely in opposition to encryption of radios. I think that it should be completely transparent. I don't think that it affects safety at all. We've been doing this for years, and it has not been an issue. Are radios stolen? And does opposition and anti-police haters get a hold of those radios? Yes. I mean, I was in the paper several years ago. We were getting 1013s on a daily basis. That's how I ended up meeting Jose LaSalle, because we had a credible source that said it was possibly Jose LaSalle. So if Jose's listened to this, that's how I met Jose. That's why when he had a scanner, he was placed under arrest. We had every reason to believe that it was him. To this day, we don't know exactly what it is. I'm not saying it was Jose, but I don't think that encryption of radios really changed the safety. And like you said about the councilman, he doesn't like what he hears, but it's the reality. I think people need to hear it. I think it's very important for journalism that the radios are not encrypted so that you can respond and actually show the public what's happening. It's then the job of the NYPD to piece it together and put it out hours later to interpret it to the public. But let the public see the raw footage in real time of what's happening. That's what news is, right? It's new. It's what's happening. Let it be just like this podcast. I think it should be unfiltered. The news footage should be unfiltered before the NYPD has an opportunity to put their spin on it and give it perspective.
And Adam, what do you think? What are your last thoughts on the encryption, like for the public? What would you like the public to know? I know, I think Janaris in State Senate, I think he wants to, he said that he would put a bill up to give media access. And I believe a few members of City Council actually said they put a bill up. I'm not familiar that they actually went through with that. I know that they said they would. What are your thoughts to the public, to the politicians that may listen to this, the media that listen to this?
I definitely don't think we need public media access to it, because, you know, the only thing that we're relying on other than that raw footage that, you know, either freelance journalists are getting or the news media themselves are driving up to the scene themselves in the daytime, because they don't work at night. The stringers work at night. So, and getting those witnesses on tape, getting whatever raw cell phone video. You take, for example, the, what was his name on Staten Island selling loose cigarettes, right? Right. I heard it was a Daily News reporter or photographer who obtained that video. Who then Daily News, published, and that video was all over the place, right? If they didn't hear that job on the radio, which, by the way, if that happened tomorrow, nobody would know about it because Staten Island is encrypted, you know? So we got to know about these things. We got to show up, get the real truth, get the witnesses on tape, get whatever videos they may have. Right, we got to do things ourselves and not just trust an email from NYPD with very little details about what happened. In some cases, a lot of details, but sometimes I'm like, is that all you got? How do I know if this is the intended victim? How do I know, the age of this victim? Is this newsworthy? This guy got a rap sheet? Is this, was it a bodega worker or was it the customer? It's a lot of, so when we show up to scenes, we get that immediate information, because while we need to write our own narratives, we need to, send the videos with those narratives to our clients, and they need to put out a story now, not hours later, not tomorrow, not a week from now. They need to put a story out now. So we need details and we need footage now. I've had cops tell me, like, why are you recording? You've got our body cam right here. Can you imagine how long it would take to obtain any kind of body cam footage? I've never tried, but I can only imagine even trying to obtain, body cam footage. So I think it's in the public. I will say again, if only the media was granted access, instant access to most of the channels, probably don't need some channels like TechG or whatever. That's what I'm not worried about, what the Citizen app gets. Well, they're technically media, so I just got a little bit of a beef with Citizen because Someone will go live, they'll use the video for free, and then, you know, and that's only one reason. I've seen kids live streaming on a Citizen, running towards a crime scene. You know, as a parent myself, I wouldn't want my kid, not that my kid would do that, but I wouldn't want, you know, just the thought of kids doing that just for, you know, clout or whatever, you know. And then on another situation, I saw a penis being live streamed on the Citizen app. You know, it took them a while to take that down, but you know, like, I'm not worried about anyone else who isn't media. I'm not worried about the hobbyist that is just listening for fun or whatever. You know, give them the delay. Don't give the media, credentialed media. Media, it was by the NYPD, and I knew people who were opposed to NYPD losing that credentialing status and giving it over to the mayor's office, right? I've heard some say, I can't cite my sources, but some have said that the mayor's office is less strict about giving media credentials out than NYPD. Because if you think about it, who better to vet a journalist than NYPD? You go around the world with an NYPD press card versus, oh, it's from the mayor's office in New York. You know, just being vetted by NYPD just seems more legit.
I'm going to give it a shot. I think I'm going to try to get a press card. I think me and Eric were talking about that. I want to see how legit they actually are. I mean, I know it looks nice, but let's see how non-biased they really are.
It might have to put Kaz's approval.
Yeah, I don't think they have to get a special meeting.
Adam, I got a question for you. I'm curious. So John and I spoke about the West Indian, the last most recent West Indian parade for 2023. And it was the least amount of media and press that we've ever seen for a West Indian parade in New York City. And we had heard, it was rumored that a lot of the media was blocked out from this parade. Do you partake in filming the West End Parade? And if you do, did you partake in it this summer? Did you capture anything? And what did you see if you were there?
I can recall doing the shootings overnight. So they have Juve overnight, and then they have the parade in the daytime. So I've never done the daytime. When I was an Uber driver, I've transported painted girls in my car in the daytime. Yeah, I wasn't too happy about that, but... for the most part, I've done the overnight Juve that's before the parade, and I've caught, you know, kids getting shot. I don't know what kids were doing at 3 o'clock in the morning in a Juve unofficial parade, but they showed up and they got shot. You know, I had them on the stretchers. It was very intense. As far as the media access for the daytime West Indian parade, I have no idea because I wasn't there. If they were blocked out, I have no idea why they might have been blocked out. I know most parades are pretty accessible to the media with credentials. They let you in the, you know, I went to the Halloween parade, pretty fun, you know. But yeah, I can't really comment on that. But I will say when nobody gets shot on the overnight Juve, with some years nobody got shot, some of our clients were surprised. Considering the history of violence and Juve, the overnight celebrations. So,
listen, we appreciate you coming on. We'd love to have you back on. I don't think that myself or Eric are like, oh, let's give these radios to everyone. But I agree with your stance. I think transparency is important. New York City is cameraing everything, right? We have the drone boy. He wants drones everywhere. Like you said, how do I obtain that body camera? There's no foolproof way to obtain that body camera video.
The FOIA something.
It's a FOIA request, for Freedom of Information Act request. However, that could be denied by the police department. So again, and how long does that take? It would be months. And so it removes transparency. So I just think that's what we're saying is we need transparency, not only so that people could see what's going on out there in the street, not so journalists could show it to us, but also for accountability for the police department. I mean, because we've seen a bunch of videos that came out recently of cops doing something that they shouldn't be doing. And I mean, and that's a check and balance, like the media and the free flow of information and doing podcasts and having allowing people to express different opinion than what's going against the official narrative of an administration. It's a check and balance. It shows transparency. And this is what this is why this country is great. So, you know, we'd love to have you back on. Eric, do you want to end us off? But before Eric goes, Adam, do you want to just say anything before you go?
Oh, yeah. You know, like if body cam footage was that accessible, I think it would be some pretty great footage, because I hear some pretty wild 13 and 85s over the radio every night. And I'd love to, you know, compile some footage together, put it on YouTube for everybody to watch. Like they're watching, you know, live PD, by PD version, you know. You know, I'm a huge, you know, I love police action and watching police action. You know, it's pretty interesting, and it's pretty, you know, high adrenaline, you know, like you're watching an action movie sometimes, you know? Absolutely. So I think that stuff, people want to watch that stuff, but you know, I don't have time to, you know, go requesting this and that, you know, hoping to get whatever, but just a thought, it would be great to have all these videos if it was easier to access.
First of all, I want to say it's an honor to have you on the show, and I definitely agree with John. I want to have you on again. I think it's been a hell of an opportunity. I just want to let you know, I wrote down so much information that you said, because I don't know if you realized it, but I learned a lot in this interview from you, because this is definitely a different angle. John and I give our perspective, our police perspective on incidents of what we see, but to hear it from you, from your lens and in your eyes and how you view things and how you respond to scenes and what it's like to be in your world, I learned a lot, you know, understanding what it is to be a stringer and then the danger that you put yourself in. I think it's awesome that you were doing pretty much undercover work during the riots. I think that you have a great perspective, and it sounds like that you're really balanced, that you look at the police perspective and also what the citizens see. I think you're a man of action. I really do. I think it's really cool. I want to thank you. It's been a hell of an opportunity. I really did learn a lot of information here. We're going to continue following you. I suggest everyone else does also.
Oh, yeah.
So with that.
This when you guys release it, too.
Absolutely. Well, now, with that being...
Short clips on your social media, but is there somewhere where you post the full raw video? Is it on the website or...
We do clips. Yeah. We also put this on YouTube. We put it on Rumble, like the full entire episode. Plus, it's audio versions are on Spotify, Apple. Audio fans are actually going to hate because your audio was awful. I'm not going to lie. Like your audio is pretty bad there. So the audio fans are going to I'm definitely going to get a lot of hate mail for this one. But but it's still it's great content. So either way, it doesn't matter. It's hard to make. It's hard to have the audio be perfect when all three of us are coming in from a different location as opposed to being in studio together. So, I mean, those are issues we're always going to face. Some of them are going to be better than others. But I think overall your message was out there, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I think your message is fantastic. I really love this episode of hearing it from the way you see it. Like I said, we always talk about how cops see things, but to see things – as a journalist and your spin on it, you know, there's a lot of commonalities in the way that we see it. So, of course, I thank you. I love to see you again. I'm going to keep following your stuff. We'll put some clips out there. Like you said, I think everyone should follow you, and I hope that you grow even more. And I think that independent journalism is definitely the present and ultimately the future. And I think it's going to out-surpass mainstream media. With that said, thank you so much for taking part on New York's Finest Retired Unfiltered podcast. Everyone out there, thank you for following and watching us. You know, of course, John McCary, as always, thank you for taking this ride with me. And Adam from Loud Labs, outstanding, brother. I'm impressed. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
everyone,
guys.
Take care.
Thank you, brother.
Likewise, man.
Law enforcement professionals dedicate their lives to serving and protecting our community. But who's protecting their financial futures? That's where Laidlaw Blue comes in. Our wealth management platform is specifically designed for the law enforcement community. Laidlaw Blue is a division within Laidlaw Wealth Management, run by retired New York City detective John McDermott. His status as a retired detective uniquely positions him to establish a deep connection between Laidlaw Blue and the law enforcement community. Our platform is easy to use and provides a range of financial services, including investment management, retirement planning, and insurance solutions. With Laidlaw Blue, you can secure your financial future and provide for your loved ones. Our team of experienced financial advisors understands the unique challenges and opportunities that law enforcement professionals face. We're here to help you navigate the complexities of financial planning and achieve your goals. Laidlaw Blue, secure your financial future today. Book a meeting using the QR code displayed or call us directly on 888-901-BLUE. That's 888-901-BLUE.